Good morning. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, and although I am super forgetful, can never remember who my guest is, can never remember what I'm supposed to be doing, my guests are very good. You're going to have to pull it up so you're talking right into it. It's because you can move it up. Brian Tobridge is very, very tall. You're going to have to get it up a little bit higher, I think, right there in front of you. So today's the day the Quincy Public School Administrator stopped by, and I'm so glad you remembered to come today because I'd completely forgotten who was coming. So Brian Trowbridge is here. You are the principal at Lincoln Douglas School. And tell us a little bit about what makes Lincoln Douglas so special. First of all, what's your little mascot?
Oh, we're the Eagles. And we've been really pushing or moving in the direction with the Ron Clark House Systems. We've initiated that this past school year. And it's created a lot of the overarching idea is to help build communities within the school community and stretch those kindergarten through fifth grade, which then creates leadership opportunities for students as they work with each other across.
So the sixth graders kind of take the lead. The fifth graders are watching the sixth graders because they know next year they're going to have to step it. But the kindergartners and first graders are worshiping the sixth graders and trying to emulate them.
And you can build that in, so you may have leadership opportunities for fifth graders. That's going to look different than the leadership opportunities for the second graders. And
right.
So that system, getting that in place, our staff is very excited. We've got a real big push to get back, get our parents and get the community back into our buildings. We've been holding some community events over the course of the year. Dream Big has stepped up and been a big help with that, along with our PTO at Lincoln Douglas, which we're blessed with wonderful leadership and a lot of creative ideas on trying to build those bridges between the home and the school, and supporting our teachers with classroom grants and those opportunities.
That building the bridge between home and school, it's an ever popular topic here on the Mary Griffith Show. Every school has its own unique personality. Every school has something that it is particularly proud about. Every school has a challenge that maybe, another school doesn't have. And so getting parent involvement, when we went to these five new elementary schools, and they're gorgeous, and they're a greater learning environment than we had in the past, but a lot of people don't live within walking distance anymore. And so if you're going to have a parent involvement, it involves driving a car or getting there somehow. What are some of the particular struggles? Because you're out on Payson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there are some people that live around there, and their kids may go to that school, but the way Quincy has configured its school, it's also trying to equalize socioeconomic groups, and so you may live closer to Lincoln School and may go to Isles if that's the way that the cookie crumbles as far as, moving children around to have a better equity of what school districts look like. So how hard is it to get parents involved, and how much is transportation a problem?
Well, our parent involvement hasn't been as much of a concern. When we have our parent events in the evening, we're able to fill that parking lot and get creative with some of the local churches to use their spaces. And then we bus them from those locations to shuttle them back and forth.
So you do kind of help them with transportation.
We do. And we've set up opportunities to run through parts of our boundary with busing over the years as that need arises. But we've not struggled with being able to get parents to our events.
Okay, well, that is fantastic. Of course, I hate to keep bringing up COVID all the time, but it's been a while now. Are we back to normal, whatever normal is? Are you still seeing some leftover residual bad effects from kids being away? Because Quincy didn't shut down quite as much as some other districts did.
I would say, this is a generational experience that we've all gone through, and there's no playbook for how to go through it and then come out of it. So I think we're all trying to feel our way. I think there's always challenges. The biggest thing is getting people together and getting people talking and getting people out of that isolation. I think that's the most important step that we can do, and that's not just in our schools, but across the board. But that leads us back to trying to get parents to the building, trying to get students to the building outside of school hours to have fun, to do something engaging, and make it meaningful for our community. So those are the ways that I think we're going to lead our way out of it. and we've seen some success doing that.
It's been hard for staff too, because I can imagine, you know, I never had the luxury of staying home. They didn't build me a radio studio in my house, so I had to report here every day, and I had to be around at least one or two other human beings who also were considered essential workers, which I laugh because, you know, the government made me an essential worker, but they didn't give me anything for it, you know, so, which is fine. But I can imagine that, you know, yeah, most teachers probably do enjoy the classroom or they wouldn't become a teacher. But if I'd been sitting at home teaching on Zoom for a year, I don't know, it'd be tough to come back to the classroom. Did you lose people because it's like, I just don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be face to face with the kids anymore. It's too much of a hassle. I didn't realize how relaxed I got until I took a year off work and just reported existentially through a box.
I think that was more difficult for teachers, not to be able to be interacting and being with
the
students.
Opposite,
I
mean, was true. They were more stressed by not having to go.
I mean, you got to imagine you go into this service industry because you enjoy working with children, you enjoy building relationships with students, and you enjoy building relationships with adults. And so, yeah, the isolation, I would say it's the other way. They really missed those opportunities to be back together. Do I think? No, I don't think I wouldn't say that in my case. I can speak towards losing people specifically for things, you know, related to the concerns with COVID. But I would say that all of us, in some way, kind of reevaluated, you know, what we are doing and how we're doing it. And I would argue that in a lot of ways, it's made us stronger as a building with regards to our staff commitment to doing what's best for kids.
Lincoln Douglas, you know, everybody has a unique character. It starts at the top with you as the principal. It carries down to every teacher that's there and every child that's there. And yet the Quincy Public School District is trying to provide an equal education to every child, no matter which elementary school they are assigned to. How does that work? Talk to me about the challenges, because you mentioned your parent-teacher organization is very strong. What happens if there's an elementary school that doesn't have parents that step up and want to be part of their parent-teacher organization? What's the district's responsibility there if they don't have what Lincoln Douglas seems to have been able to achieve?
Well, I think you know, one support that our district does provide across all buildings is the Dream Big Foundation and being able to write grants. Across the district, we have leadership inside those classrooms that are creative, that are looking for opportunities to create a fun a fun event or something to engage students and their parents, and using the Dream Big Foundation has been that's something I can't speak to in some of the other districts I've worked. And we're lucky and blessed to have that here in Quincy.
So when you want something or a teacher wants something at your school, some teacher at another school may want something completely different, but they know they can get funding from the Quincy Public School Foundation. And that is so different. You know, back in the olden days, you're not as old as I am, but, you know, the only places that had foundations were private schools. Mm-hmm. You know, Quincy Notre Dame was privately funded, so they were constantly raising money. Who ever thought that a public school district would have a foundation and would raise money and have a banquet and do all the things that all the private schools have been doing all these years? And yet, it is necessary. Mm-hmm. As a teacher, is it still frustrating sometimes when the Illinois Constitution says the primary function of state government shall be to educate its children, and yet they're not spending 51% of the budget on schools, so they're not living up to the letter of the Constitution? Is it still frustrating as a teacher? Is that one of the frustrations, that it's still hard to get the general public? It's kind of like, we love our veterans, but we don't want to pay higher taxes. Oh, we love our teachers, but we don't want to, you know, support them, you know, by giving them, you know, raises or something like that. Is that a struggle?
I think teachers, they lead with their heart. And they're gonna do what they can to help students be successful, and they will invest time equity, they will invest financial equity. Those are areas that we're trying to support, so that they're not using their own their own funding for supplies and items for their classrooms. We, you know, use our PTO, we use some of our building monies to be able to help support those supplies as needed for all of our staff. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, the being equitable across the district, I think the district's overarching, you know, theme has been we're going to provide these services regardless of where students live and regardless of where they go to school. And I think that's very powerful for our community.
Yeah, having that fairness is really important. You know, the other thing is, yeah, teachers, it takes a special person to be a teacher. It takes a special person to be in the medical field. It takes a special person to be an accountant. You know, I couldn't sit in an office all day and just look at a spreadsheet. And yet our chief financial officer, that's what he does all day, and he enjoys that. So everybody's got their own talent and their own skill. Unfortunately, we need more teachers and we need more medical professionals, and it really is hard to attract to those professions because there are some stresses. But speak to this, because one thing that I think the average person overlooks, and I think teachers, nobody goes into teaching for this, but after you've been there 5 years, you start to maybe think about this. The pay scale may not be great now, but I'm still a member of a group that has a pension. How much does pension come into recruiting teachers or telling people about teaching as a job? Because you've got a little gray hair on your head. You're not ready to go yet. But certainly there is some delayed gratification for you knowing that, well, in the private sector, I maybe could have earned more money being the, you know, chief executive officer instead of Lincoln Douglas School. I could have been the CEO of ABC Company, and I maybe would have made more money. But if I don't have a pension, then when I stop working, just like I'll stop working here at WTAD, and then it's over. This company's going to give me zippity ding dong. That's it. You know, I'm done. But if I'm a teacher in the Quincy Public Schools, my salary in part lives on until I die. Is that helpful? Or do people not think that far ahead?
I think financial security, and again, it's a sliding scale, you know, depending on what kind of industry you're working in.
Right.
And being in education, we're in a service industry, so we realize that. I think, yes, there is a value to, and I can't speak for all, but, you know, there is a value to being able to be secured financially in what you do for a living. I don't believe that that's a driving force at this point for people that are going into education. I think it's more for the
retention,
you know, being able to help. But with retention, I think, yes, there is a value to being competitive in that market across the state. And in our case, being competitive with Missouri, local, you know, nearby Missouri and Iowa schools, and being able to retain staff is a vital, very important piece for us as a district.
Yes, because we used to say we had no good road system, but now we've built a good road system, and guess what? It goes to Palmyra. And so you could lose a teacher to Palmyra, or Palmyra could lose a teacher to us. A lot of it just depends on, like you said, some of those intangibles. Nobody says they want to be a teacher because in 40 years I'll get a pension. You know, I agree with that. But it is interesting that salary is mentioned by a lot of people as a deterrent to think of teaching as a long-term career, something they might do in their 20s, but then they get a, quote, real job that pays real money. So there have to be some factors factored in that, you know, the average taxpayer has to say to themselves, there is a benefit in longevity. Is there anything like tenure in a public school system? I know we have it at the college level. Is there anything like tenure at Lincoln Douglas School, or is everybody just employed at will and every year your contract's renewed and every year it could not be renewed? How does that work?
So, yeah, there's a collective bargaining agreement that is between the district and the union, which then sets up in Illinois, it's a 4-year process to obtain tenure within the public schools. So, yes, there is a process in the state of Illinois to obtain tenure. And you know, but there's still processes with the evaluation process and systems in place to help staff continue to grow even after they've become tenure.
And what does that tenure allow you to do? Obviously, you have seniority. So if I'm teaching third grade at one elementary school and I would prefer to be in another elementary school, do I get a transfer? Can I request a transfer? How does that work? I mean, what are the perks? How do you decide who's going to work at Lincoln Douglas School next year and who's going to work at Isles and Rooney and Fox and Baldwin?
So there is the process for hiring is set. So if a staff member wants to apply for a different position in another building, you know, they can do that whether they're tenured or not. And then they go through that interview process, and then the team would select a staff member to fill that role, whether it's from their building, from another building. I think what you're looking for, really, more importantly, is the experience. It isn't just the fact that you've worked 10 years. It's what have you done during those 10 years.
I've made it for 10 years. I'm terrible, but I've made it for 10 years.
I don't think it's as simple as you just have the number of years of experience. It really comes down to those experiences and leadership opportunities. Because, you know, whether you're a custodian, a classroom teacher, a paraeducator, a secretary, working for maintenance, if you're inside of a building and you're working or interacting with students, you know, you're an educational leader within that capacity. And I think all of our staff members, they view those opportunities to work with kids, and they value it very much. And I think that is more of a driving force on where, you know, how, you know, employment shifts occur.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because the lunch lady, the custodian, and the bus driver may be the confidant of the child that, you know, maybe the classroom teacher isn't, but wherever, that's why it has to be a team.
It does.
Because,
it absolutely
you know,
does.
Some kids, gravitate towards certain, you know, that's why I'm glad to see more men coming into, you know, education fields, because we always thought of teaching as being kind of female-centric and that administrators were men, but the classroom teacher was a female, and we'll talk about that when we come back. I know that you're thinking, am I the superintendent? Why are you asking me all these high-level questions? Do I look like Dr. Todd Pettit? But, I mean, I'm really interested in getting a, you know, upper management level of how this all works because, you know, every single school district around here has people that transfer and change jobs and move from one level to another, and they're probably wondering, oh, man, I was really waiting for my kid to be in third grade so they could have so-and-so for their teacher, and now, oh, they went somewhere, they did something, and, you know, or, oh, I hope I don't get so-and-so for a teacher. Could she not transfer before? You know, my kid's there. So we all know that personalities come into play. We're going to take a break and head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. We will be right back. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Brian Trowbridge is my guest today. We had a brief technical blip there. Sorry about that. We lost our air signal momentarily, but we're back now. And Brian Trowbridge is here, and fortunately, I don't think much of his conversation was lost. And so we've been talking about different things administratively. You mentioned the house system, and we've talked about this with other principals that have come on and have used this in Quincy. You know, years ago, it was the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Now it's the house system. It seems to me that sometimes it's like every 10 years we have to have something new just to reinvigorate, if nothing else, the grown-ups, you know, because the kids, whatever they're taught, that's what they have. How is the house system different than, say, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which we were all in on, you know, 15 years ago?
Well, what I've noticed is that there are a lot of additional supports and systems in place with this with the Ron Clark House systems, and it aligns very well with what we're already doing with our social emotional learning, and so those two pieces I think are making a big difference as we shift into it. Now, again, we're living it as we're making the change. That's what I've noticed at this point. But it'll be an ongoing process.
Now, how long have you been in education?
Oof, this is year 24.
Okay, 24 years ago, Was there as much emphasis on social, emotional education, or was it more ABC curriculum, reading, writing, and arithmetic? When did we start caring about how children feel?
It's a tough question for
was
me.
Was that always part of your
well,
gig?
So for me, I started out at the high school level, so it's going to look quite a bit different than what I'm doing at the elementary level at this point.
You left all those hormones.
Yeah, well, what I'll tell you is that with the elementary, you know, it's developmental. You know, students are learning how to self-regulate and how to get their needs met while, you know, feeling their way on how far or what do I need to self-regulate in order to get what I want. And that's a big change when you're going from a home environment before kindergarten, first, second grade, and then in a structured, you know, academic-based classroom with 24 other students in it. That takes help. That takes support, and it's developmental. So it's expected that they're going to have to, you know, they're going to be learning how to meet their needs in a different way. And that's what I notice, you know, that's obviously much different than at the high school level.
Right. So I guess, you know, I'm trying to think back to my childhood and my brother's childhood. He went to public school in Quincy. I went to private school in Quincy, and I'm trying to think, you know, I had caring, compassionate teachers who cared about me, but, you know, during the school day, maybe I was just oblivious to it, but I don't think anybody was worried if little Mary Kathleen was happy. It was like, learn to spell cat and shut up. You know, it's like, do your work. These are the tasks that are assigned to you, and to get out of first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, you have to be proficient in this. And during that time, there's always trauma and turmoil in every child's life. It's different for every child, but there's always something going on.
Yeah.
And so is it better now that we're more concerned about what little Joey and Janie are thinking? Or are we spending too much time worried about what little Joey and Janie are thinking, and we should just be teaching them how to spell cat?
I think it makes a difference. I think... I can reflect on some of the relationships that I've built this last school year working with some of my students that have needed that additional support outside of the classroom, and it's not related to anything going on inside school, but give them that opportunity to make a connection and know that they're more than just their classroom teacher cares about them. And how far and how quickly they come out of that. And once they get out of that mindset, that you know, the not necessarily fight or flight, but the
well, it is
just trying to being able to survive. You know, getting out of that mindset allows them to access the learning opportunities. Now, the teachers are going to continue to keep teaching. The students are going to keep learning, but for those students that need additional supports, they're not going to be able to attend to those learning opportunities without getting out of that mindset. And so I think, yes, it is making a difference, and it is helping students be more successful academically.
And that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you're educating, in a sense, the whole child. And there brings up another, you know, conflict. I was, you know, ProPublica just put out a big article about homeschooling versus no schooling. And Illinois is very lax. And some people say, yay, they should be. You know, nobody has a right to tell me how to raise my children. And so some people have trouble with the school district, or maybe they're accused of abuse. And so the CCFS makes a visit to the home, and they're like, well, we'll stop this right now. I'm not going to send my kid anywhere out in public where somebody's going to see a bruise on him. And so I'm going to homeschool him. And there's no standard that is set for that, and there's no way to track who's being homeschooled and who's being no schooled, as this publication said. There is something to be said for the public school, even the private school setting, because it is a way for the community to integrate those children into the society. Whereas sometimes if a child, you know, homeschooling, some people look at that as a very lofty goal, and they see these kids win the National Spelling Bee, and they're all homeschooled, and, you know, all these great achievers that start college when they're 15, and they're all homeschooled. But what we don't hear about are the children who are no schooled. They're supposed to be homeschooled, but they're not really. They're not taught anything. They're just allowed to stay home. How does the education system fight that? Because the state of Illinois has no real law to do that. And have you ever seen that in your own experience in 24 years where a child is having severe difficulties and so the next thing you know, they're just homeschooled?
Yes. So what we will do is we have a system connected with the ROE where we...
We're Regional Office of Education.
And we each of our buildings will track those students who have either moved or unenrolled until they enroll in another school district. When they get enrolled in another district or in another school, then they will request records. So we track that at the building level, and we share that information with the ROE, and then they follow up from their end. But we continue to track that over time until the student is enrolled.
Well, what if the student is never enrolled?
Correct. So when it comes to the homeschooling, I think one thing we always attempt to continue to do is develop those relationships with and provide informational resource opportunities with those families as they request. But we want to continue to create opportunities for them to get to know us and know how we can support them, not just their child, but them, their families as needed as well.
But do you remember in your experience, have there been children who've disappeared and they've said, we're just going to be homeschooled, and then they just literally drop off the radar because you don't ever see them again?
Yeah, we've had students who have moved out of the community that we've continued to watch for. And we communicate those, that information, especially if there's already a community agency involved with the family. You know, we will work with them to make sure that they're aware of that at that time as well.
Okay. Well, it's just, this recent article just caused my mind to think of that because I was involved as a staff member at a college, and again, not in any teaching capacity, but in a support capacity. And I became aware of a lot of homeschooled children that were in college. And I was quite astounded at the wide range of academic difference there
mm-hmm.
was.
Yeah.
Some of them
amazing
were like
yeah.
brilliant uh-huh. and obviously homeschooling because it's like, ugh, I'm so bored in school. I want to read, Plato and everything else. And we're still playing with crayons. And then the other ones were like, I didn't do very good. So I just got homeschooled. And so they basically have an eighth grade education and that's it.
It comes down to the experience of the teacher, and the teacher is the parent. And so, yes, I over my years and, even when I was in the high school level, there were those opportunities for alternative ways to get the high school diploma, and so outside of being enrolled in a public school. So yes, there are many success stories with those opportunities.
Okay, so yeah, it's interesting because if you don't, like you can be truant and get in trouble for not showing up at school. But if you do that enough and then your mother just says or your father says, well, we're just going to homeschool them, they don't get in trouble anymore because nobody's expecting them to show up because they're being homeschooled. And
well,
yet there's really no criteria for they say you're supposed to be teaching them X, Y, and Z, but nobody's following up on that is the problem.
And that's where the relationship develops and finding out, what are the concerns of the parent? What are the concerns of the family about how their child's needs are being met? And then, sometimes it's just a lack of understanding and you build that communication loop and new learning occurs and the relationship's able to be developed and you create support systems. So maybe you need to be creative in how the child gets to school and what mm-hmm. the school can do to help with that.
And I think that Quincy Public Schools have done an excellent job of trying to reach out and having more counselors that deal with problems in the home that are preventing the child from coming to school. And so getting that child in school. And of course, we all know that extracurricular activities may be that carrot. Yay, I'm going to get to study math today, but yay, we've got PE, or yay, I can be a Blue Devil, or yay, I can go to science club or whatever, So that's why extracurricular and not everything is in the classroom. And that's where social emotional development, right. We've always had it. We've just called it something different in the past, you know, yearbook club. We'll come back with our remaining moments in just a moment. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Brian Trowbridge, always glad when you come by. Just the Quincy Public Schools, all our schools are filled with wonderful people. We had two bus drivers from Camp Point here visiting our studio earlier this morning. You know, everybody contributes to the good of children. You know, this is the summer off for kids, and boy, they deserve it. You know, I mean, we all need to go on vacation. I'll be taking mine next week. But what are some of the things that parents can do, no matter how old your kids are, but what are some of the things parents can do this summer? Yeah, let them have fun, but don't let them completely get out of school routine or out of studying or out of learning.
Yeah.
Because, boy, you don't want them to have 2 months. They're, some of them are behind anyway, so don't put the starting gate 100 meters further than it should be.
Right. I would say first thing is keep them connected with their peers. Don't allow them to isolate themselves with social media or with technology. Get them out. Get them with other students. Keep them interacting with you and keep them interacting with peers their age. I think, you know, having some type of a routine in place where you're getting they're having an opportunity for opportunities to read.
Build the volcano made out of baking soda.
Well,
and stuff,
you can do creative things. Yes, new learning opportunities.
Do that
keep
at
them
somebody
learning.
Else's house,
yeah,
not yours.
Letter identification, number ID,
what about
those
teenagers,
types of things.
Though, because they won't. You know,
so with them, look, the learning is going to look different. It's probably going to be based more so on something that interests them. And so, you know, finding those avenues, but you're going to do that through conversation. So, you know, continue, you know, with those verbal interactions with your child across the summertime, keep them, keep learning, about their interests and, it is interesting to see, because I've got two that are at high school age, is seeing how their interests will shift from week to week and engaging and supporting, you know, those new learning opportunities for them is vital as well.
Yeah, you know, if the only book you can get them to read is the manual, How to Soup Up Your GTO, that's okay.
That's a win.
You know, that's a win. I mean, whatever they're interested in, try to find a way that they can understand, hey, I'm actually doing calculus here.
Right.
You know, I don't want to admit that, but I'm actually using algebraic formulas here, and I need that for my race car or whatever. I need that for my ballerina steps.
And boy, they'll drill down into that if they're interested in it. That's for sure.
So just find out what they're interested in and make sure that they do it. And register for school. Don't show up on the first day going, I'm here.
That
I'm
helps.
Here for my free public education. Thank you, Brian Trowbridge.
Thank you.